Sexual auxiliaries are mentioned both in the Kama Sutra and in some Indian and Chinese texts. They are categorized into herbal aphrodisiacs and sexual accessories. Today, you will discover all you need to know about them. Next, take a fascinating journey through the delights of the Arabian gem, the perfumed garden, where you will discover the many names given to the virile limb. Also today, we begin a trip into the world of the Hindu god Ganesha, who is the god with the elephant head, who helps mortals to surpass all obstacles. The meditation will be of communion with Ganesha. Amaris and Tiger Lily will guide you through today's revelations.
Hello and welcome to Tantra FM, your guide to sacred love. I'm your host, Amaris. Sexual auxiliaries. Sexual auxiliaries are mentioned both in the Kama Sutra and in some Indian and Chinese texts. They're categorized into herbal aphrodisiacs and sexual accessories. Accessories, or love instruments, represent those kinds of devices that are used in order to add something or even to substitute the genitals. Ancient texts describe different devices to put around or on top of the lingam to lengthen or to thicken it. These were usually made of gold, silver, copper, ivory, horns, wood, or even jade. Lots of them are described in the Chinese, Japanese, and Indian literature. There are also some descriptions of special rings, made sometimes of jade, that were put at the base of the lingam. They had a prominent part that was used in order to excite the woman's clitoris during erotic union, and thus generate a clitorico-vaginal orgasm without discharging the sexual energy, or a complete orgasm, when the clitorical orgasm and vaginal one were launched at the same time. Such sexual auxiliaries were considered innovation by those lovers who could use them when needed. They were in no case presented as ideal ways of making love, and in general they were considered as being without sensitivity and even unnecessary. Orthodox Hindu law books forbid the use of any lingam substitutes or of the so-called dildos because they are an offense to Shiva, whose lingam is alive, natural, and always erect. Medical Hindu texts say that if those heavy inanimate objects are being introduced into the yoni, they can cause long-term physical problems to the woman. The Kama Sutra suggests that only live and natural objects can be used without fear, as dildos, and so it talks about bananas, mangoes, carrots, radishes, cucumbers, plant stems, and some other fruits and vegetables that have the same structure and shape as an erect lingam. The same text says that a reed soaked into certain aphrodisiacal oils and tied around the waist with laces can be used instead of the lingam. Chinese and Japanese texts talk about a double dildo. It is a sexual accessory made of processed roots of wood or ivory, and it has two silk stripes that are attached right in the middle of it. A woman can put one end into her own yoni and fix it up with laces tied to her waist. Thus, she can satisfy another woman with the other prominent end of the sexual instrument while she enjoys the excitement produced by the other end's motion inside of her. Another oriental innovation, sometimes used by women in order to satisfy themselves, is known as the Birman bell. It consists of two small empty silver spheres. One of them contains hermetically a certain quantity of mercury, and the other one has a kind of metallic tongue that vibrates and makes a sound when it's shaken. These twin spheres are carefully introduced into the yoni and tied to one another with a silk stripe in order to be easily used. When, after they are introduced, They remain there, and when the woman is moving, the mercury creates a light vibration inside. That's very nice. This sexual device is called Nei Ling in China, or the trying bell, and there's a similar one in Japan called Rinotama. Sex shops nowadays give a lot of sexual accessories of this kind, and a large series of vibrators. Unfortunately, most of them are made large scale, out of synthetic materials, and they're sometimes ugly and even bad or noxious for the human body. Tantric tradition considers that it is best that the lovemaking done with continence not be complicated with external sexual devices. A long prelude is also recommended by the Kama Sutra, especially when the woman is not capable of completely satisfying the woman. The sexual penetration should not start until she's very excited, and her yoni is lubricated enough in natural ways. Nowadays, there are a lot of creams, gels, and oils for lubricating the genitals. These commercial products are quite unnecessary. In most cases, the excitement of sexual intercourse with continence will produce more than enough sexual secretions to allow a comfortable and very exciting entrance of the lingam. Saliva can also be used very efficiently, especially at the beginning. It has certain essential and occult properties. Any sexual accessory that is introduced into the yoni has to be soft enough not to do any damage to the interior parts of the body. A Japanese text advises, in case of using a dildo, to warm it firstly by introducing and maintaining it in warm water or oil for 5 to 7 minutes. Sexual auxiliaries like the fruits that were previously indicated can be used in order to play some games, and they can be consumed afterwards. A complete approach to sexual auxiliaries must include some playful devices like a harness or a rocking chair or bed or water jets and other numerous inventions that are conceived spontaneously in the moment of loving ecstasy. The whole atmosphere can be viewed as a sexual auxiliary, and that is why we must be careful so that it is beautiful by using natural perfumed and exciting products and colored lights. The human body has a lot of possibilities in using the limbs, hands, fingers, toes, chin, nose, breasts, or tongue. Use your own sexual auxiliaries if you need them. Don't forget that according to tantric learning, the direct contact between excited bodies possesses a special power that cannot be equaled by any kind of substitutes or accessories. The perfect sexual continence of a couple will allow you to experience a lot of miraculous states during your erotic games. Sexual auxiliaries must be soft enough, exciting, and well fixed in order to complete the job that they are used for. Sundry names given to the sexual organs of men. The Perfumed Garden is an old Arabian sexual education book inspired from the Kama Sutra. This time we will present to you different names given to the male sexual organ. Don't forget to read the whole book online in our e-library. The member is called El Adur, on account of its alternate swelling and subsiding again. If swollen up, it stands erect, and if not, it sinks down flaccid. It is called El Hamma, the pigeon, because after having been swollen, it returns to rest and resembles a pigeon sitting on her eggs. El Taunana, the tinkler, so-called because every time it enters or comes out of the vulva and coition, it makes a noise. El Hormak, the indomitable. It has received this name because when in a state of erection, it begins to move its head, searching for the entrance to the vulva till it has found it, and then it walks in quite insolently, without asking leave. El Akhlil, the liberator. Thus called because in penetrating into the vulva of a woman thrice repudiated, it gives her the liberty to return to her first husband. El Zeb, the verge, from the word Deb, which means creeping. This name was given to the member because when it gets between a woman's thighs and feels a plump vulva, it begins to creep upon the thighs and the mount of Venus, then approaches the entrance of the vulva, and keeps creeping in until it is in possession and it is comfortably lodged, and having it all its own way, penetrates into the middle of the vulva, there to ejaculate. El Hamash, the exciter. It has received this name because it excites the vulva by its frequent entries and exits. El Nasse, the sleeper, from its deceitful appearance. When it gets into an erection, it lengthens out and stiffens itself to such an extent that one might think it would never get soft again. But when it has left the vulva, after having satisfied its passion, it goes to sleep. There are members that fall asleep while still inside the vulva, but the majority of them come out firm, and then afterwards get drowsy and little by little go to sleep. El Zodam, the crowbar. It is so called because when it meets the vulva and it does not let it pass in directly, it forces the entrance with its head, breaking and tearing everything, like a wild beast in the rutting season. El Khiad, the tailor. It takes this name from the mastery with which it knows how to maneuver about at the entrance of the vulva, like a needle in the hand of a tailor, creeping and rubbing against it until it is sufficiently roused, after which it enters. Moshefi El Redil, the extinguisher of passion. This name is given to a member which is large, strong, and slow to ejaculate. Such a member satisfies most completely the amorous wishes of a woman. For after having wrought her up to the highest pitch, it allays her excitement better than any other, and in the same way it calms the ardor of the man. When it wants to get into the vulva and, arriving at the portal, finds it closed, it laments, begs, and promises, "Oh, my love, let me come in. I will not stay long." And when it has been admitted, it breaks its ward and makes a long stay and does not take its leave until it has satisfied its ardor by the ejaculation of the sperm, coming and going, tilting high and low, and rummaging right and left. The vulva protests. "How about your word, you deceiver?" she says. "You said you would only stop in for a moment." And the member answers, "Oh, certainly. I shall not retire till I have encountered your womb, but after having found it, I will engage to withdraw at once." At these words, the vulva takes pity on him and advances her matrix with clasps and kisses its head as if saluting it. The member then retires with its passion cooled down. El Khorate, the turnabout. This name was given to it because on arriving at the vulva, it pretends to come on important business. It knocks at the door, turns about everywhere without shame or bashfulness, investigating every corner from the right to the left, forward and backward, and then at once darts to the bottom of the vagina for the ejaculation. El Dukak, the striker. Thus called because on arriving at the entrance of the vulva, it gives a slight knock. If the vulva opens the door, it enters. If there is no response, it begins to knock again, and does not cease until it is admitted. The parasite, who wants to get into the house of a rich man to be present at a feast, does the same. He knocks at the door, and if it is open, he walks in, but if there is no response to his knock, he repeats it again and again until the door is opened. And similarly, the dukkak acts with the door of the vulva. Knocking at the door means the friction of the member against the entrance of the vulva until the latter becomes moist. The appearance of this moisture is the phenomenon alluded to by the expression of opening the door. El owame, the swimmer. Because when it enters the vulva, it does not remain in one favored place, but on the contrary, turns to the right, to the left, goes forward, draws back, and then moves like a swimmer in the middle amongst its own sperm and the fluid furnished by the vulva, as if in fear of drowning and trying to save itself. El Dejal, the housebreaker, merits that name because, on coming to the door of the vulva, this one asks, "What do you want?" "I want to come in." "Impossible! I cannot take you in on account of your size," says the vulva. Then the member insists that the other one should only receive its head, promising not to come in entirely. Then it approaches, rubs its head twice or thrice between the vulva's lips till they get humid and thus lubricated, then introduces its head first, and after, with one push, plunges in up to the testicles. El Awar, the one-eyed. Because it has but one eye, which is not like the other eyes, and it does not see clearly. El Fordis, the bald one, because there is no hair on its head, which makes it look bald. Abu Adna, he with one eye. It has received this name because it has one eye, which presents the peculiarity of being without pupil and eyelashes. El Atsar, the stumbler. It is called so because if it wants to penetrate into the vulva but does not see the door, it beats about, above and below. Blindly, thus, it continues to stumble as over stones on a road, until the lips of the vulva get humid and at last it manages to get inside. Then the vulva says, "What has happened to you that made you stumble about so?" The member answers, "Oh, my love, it was a stone lying in the road." El Domar, the odd-headed, because its head is different from all the other heads. Abu Rokba, the one with a neck, that is, the being with a short neck, a well-developed throat, thick at the end and a bald head, and who, moreover, has coarse and bristly hair from the navel to the pubis. Abu Ketada, the hairy one, who has a forest of hair. This name is given to it when the hair is abundant about it. El Besis, the impudent one. It has received this name because from the moment that it gets stiff and long, it does not care for anyone. It lifts impudently the clothing off its master by raising its head fiercely and makes him ashamed while itself feels no shame. It acts in the same unabashed way with women, turning up their clothes and laying bare their thighs. Its master may blush at this conduit, but as to itself, its stiffness and determination to plunge into a vulva only increase. El Mostachi, the shame-faced one. This sort of member, which is met with sometimes, is capable of feeling ashamed and timid when facing a vulva which it does not know, and it is only after a little time that it gets bolder and stiffens. Sometimes it is even so much trouble that it remains incompetent for the coitus, which happens in particular when a stranger is present, in which case it becomes quite incapable of moving. El Bekad, the weeper, so called on account of the many tears it sheds. As soon as it gets an erection, it weeps. When it sees a pretty face, it weeps. Handling a woman, it weeps. It goes even so far as to weep tears sacred to memory. El-Hezaz, the rummager. It is named thus because as soon as it penetrates into the vulva, it begins to rummage about vigorously until it has appeased its passion. El-Lizaz, the unionist, receives that name because as soon as it is inside the vulva, it pushes and works till fur meets fur, and even makes efforts to force the testicles into it. Abu-Laba, the expectorant, has received this name because when coming near a vulva, or when it sees one, or even when merely thinking of one, or when its master touches a woman or plays with her or kisses her, its saliva begins to move and it has tears in its eye. The saliva is particularly abundant when it has been for some time out of work, and it will even wet then his master's clothing. This member is very common, and there are but few people who are not furnished with it. The liquid is shed is cited by lawyers under the name of Mehdi. Its production is the result of toyings and of lascivious thoughts. With some people it is so abundant as to fill the vulva, so that they erroneously believe that it comes from the woman. El-Fatash, the searcher. From its habit, when in the vulva, of turning in every direction as if in search of something, and that something is the matrix, of course, it will know no rest until it has found it. El-Hakak, the rubber. It has gotten this name because it will not enter the vagina until it has rubbed its head against the entrance and the lower part of the belly. It is frequently mistaken for the next one. El-Murehi, the flabby one. This one can never get in because it is too soft, and it is therefore content to rub its head against the entrance to the vulva until it ejaculates. It gives no pleasure to the woman, but only inflames her passion without being able to satisfy it, and makes her cross and irritable. El-Motela, the ransacker, so named because it penetrates into unusual places, making itself well acquainted with the state of vulvas and can distinguish their qualities and faults. El-Mokchof, the discoverer, has been thus denominated because in getting up and raising its head, it raises the vestments which hide it and uncovers its master's nudities.
Hello, and welcome to Tantra FM, a step into bliss. I'm your host, Tiger Lily. Ganesha, the god with the elephant head, part 1. The word Ganesha is made of the words Gana and Isha. Gana, referring to all beings that have a name and a form, and Isha means lord or master. Ganesha is the name given to Shiva's second son for becoming the lord of the entire creation. Ganesha, or Ganapati, is a highly popular god in India. Ganesha is invoked to remove obstacles, as well as at the beginning of all important actions, trips, building houses, writing books, getting paranormal powers and discriminating capacity. He is the god of education, knowledge, literature and arts. All spiritual rituals in the Hindu tradition begin with an invocation of Ganesha. In the tantric tradition, it is considered that Ganesha protects and guides sexual relationships, giving them a spiritual orientation. He is considered as the embodiment of tantric mysteries. His symbolic representation. Ganesha is a small stature god with a large round abdomen, four arms, and an elephant head with one fang only. In three of his hands, he holds an axe, ankush, a loop, sash, and sometimes a shell. In some representations, he makes a gesture of bestowing his divine favors with the fourth hand, but most often he holds a cake, ladu. His eyes shine like two diamantes. He rides a rat or is accompanied by one, an ex-demon whom he defeated and then accepted as a vehicle. This representation may not be so attractive for a rational mind. The animal head and the fat body attract children, but for the adults, he may seem ridiculous. Nonetheless, it is a mistake to be dismayed by his appearance, because Ganesha is the protector of refined people who are not fooled by exterior appearances. The people who cannot see the divine in him and are distracted by his representation become a prey for the discursive mind, the greatest obstacle on the spiritual path. Ganesha's acceptance as a spiritual force has an effect calming of and control over the mind, as well as the dismissal of all doubts. Therefore, Ganesha is considered as the most appropriate deity for the removal of obstacles. The faith in him generates great spiritual force, reversing the natural downward flow of energy and orientating it upwards, allowing thus the activation of our superior center of energy. The divine Ganesha is impenetrable. He brings on firmness to people who meditate on him and invoke him at the beginning of all their actions. Now let us perform a meditation with the following theme, the communion with Ganesha. In order to help our concentration and to create a better resonance with the aspect we are meditating upon, we shall use a musical support. Sit down on a chair with your spine straight or assume a meditation pose such as Sukhasana, Vajrasana or Padmasana. For those of you who are still unfamiliar with these positions, you can learn about them on www.shivashakti.com. Make sure your spine, neck and head are straight and in a vertical position. Relax your entire body. Empty your mind and acquire a strong inner focus. Do not allow anything to disturb your concentration at this point. Start breathing deeply and rhythmically. With each inhalation, imagine that you are bringing peace and harmony into your being. Also, with each exhalation, imagine that you are eliminating all tension, stress, and anything else that might disturb your meditation. Now we are ready to begin. It is time to focus our mind and meditate upon the state of communion with Ganesha. Thank you. That's all we have time for today. I'm Tiger Lily, wishing you love and light.